thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. The UFC is back this weekend. And coming up on today's episode, I'm going to discuss this weekend's must-see main event, guys. We got Sean Brady. He's going against Gilbert Burns. Plus, I'm going to tell you why Sean O'Malley is the biggest star in mixed martial arts. I also have a reason to believe that John Jones has blocked me. I'm going to get into all of that and more on today's show. Let's start here. Conor McGregor, three things, okay? Fighter, artist, entertainer. And I know for Conor's fans and base, you, that you believe what you love is the fighter. But I'm not certain that that's accurate. The artist and the entertainer are ever bit as important to the career as the fight itself. And I'm not sharing anything new with you. I want to start with that foundation because like any art, it's very open to interpretation. And you have not only what the audience gets, but then you also want to know what the artist himself was hoping to relay. And you cannot consider very many athletes, especially cage fighters, to be some kind of sophisticated, deep, message-giving people. But Conor's very different, isn't he, guys? He's a master marketer. He's a masker. What the hell's he got to do with the whiskey business? What's he got to do with the suits and clothing business? What's he got to do, right? You start asking these things and you start realizing he's done a really good job with all of them, all the way down to a restaurant in Ireland that if I'm ever there, I will go to. And Conor, for the second time now, second time in as many weeks, that means two, by the way, has put out a piece of him doing something. And I don't know what to call it. The first time Conor did it, he was on a back deck of a very beautiful place that I don't think was his home. So I'm interpreting that it was a vacation home or something like this, which could be wrong, but it was a very beautiful place on a deck on a beautiful day, hitting a heavy bag softly and at slow speed. But Conor's body moves in a very interesting way. Lorisenko gave a breakdown of some of the things that Conor does, where he'll load his weight on his front foot, just by example. He'll hit you with a cross that Vitor Belfort would knock you out with, but Conor's not even meaning to. He'll use it like a jab, and he can because now his shoulders are turned, as opposed to this way. But the whole reason he's going to hit you with that is because he's loading up the hook. Now, that would be very standard in boxing, a 1-2-3, where you shift your weight, why you shift your weight, where your power comes from. But it's difficult to see in most guys. Conor's body moves in a very beautiful way. And you don't get to use that word very often to describe cage fighting. Like for somebody to have a beautiful style, that just isn't something you have very often. So, when Conor is punching the bag, I don't know what the message is. My interpretation, I think most were that, hey, he's working out. There's a workout video of Conor. But it's the things that aren't in the video that made me think something. Like, for example, I didn't necessarily think that it was a workout video. I thought it was a vacation video. The area he was in was so beautiful. The home and the back deck that he was in covered, and they got lighting up there, and there's a speaker. It was a dream deck. Like, I felt like that was the story that he was attempting to tell. Oh, and then by the way, he's going to get us to click and he's going to get us to look because he does move in such an interesting way. And when guys have special moves, TJ Dillashaw comes to mind. TJ Dillashaw had a technique that was unusual. I even asked him about it. And I'm friends with him, and he told me no. He said, after my next fight, I will tell. He wouldn't tell me what he was doing. And it was the way he changes his feet, disguises his entry with a cross, steps across, turns it into a takedown, of which I have never seen TJ set up and go for that he missed. I have never seen him fail. This is his go-to. But when he does it fast, it's hard to see. Lots of guys are like that. But when Conor is slowing everything down, it's not even a workout. He's emphasizing mechanics and body movement. You're starting to see some of his tricks. You're literally, he's showing to the world what he does. He's showing to the world what Laura Sanko gave an analysis on ESPN because she had to break down in a cubicle on a screen and rewind and watch it again. It was just, it's one of these things where I'm not convinced the story he's trying to tell is that, hey, look at me, I'm hitting the bag. In fact, I could see more wrong with it than's not. When I talk about what's not in the video, well, a gym, let's start with that. A coach, let's lead with that. Teammates, let's go to that. You cannot get better without a team. And nobody ever has. Floyd Mayweather has a coach. LeBron James has a coach. Tiger Woods has a coach. Tom Brady has a coach. Serena has a coach. Simone has a coach. However, you cannot separate from the pack if you don't do workouts on your own. Right? You got to have both. But I'm watching Connor, and it's not a workout. It's soft. It's slow. It's methodical. I couldn't even put it as a warm-up. It was too soft to be a warm-up. Not to mention warming up for what? There's no coach here. There's no partners here. I don't see an Aerodyne in the corner. Like, it's also too slow to be a cool-down. Not to mention, he is not sweaty. There is nothing that would lead you to believe it was a cool-down, and he's not wearing gloves. If it was a cool-down at the end of practice, you would still have your hands wrapped. So there's just little things you're trying to get from the video. And that was the first one. Now let me go to the more recent one. He's in another beautiful area, right? He's in an area that he has transformed into a workout space. This is not a gym. This is not a dirty, grimy. This is his own space. And he's doing the same thing. Now, there are some absolute tells when a guy's not ready to fight. I mean, there's some absolute, if you are a handicapper or a predictor of any level, there are things that you can see and know it is over. And I'm going to tell you this, and you're going to think I'm attempting to be funny, but I'm not. And if you go back and you look, you won't find examples around it. If a guy ever exercises and or trains, and they're very different things, with a hat on, it is over. I don't know why, by the way. I'm sharing with you, if you ever see a guy working out and he's got a hat, it can be backwards, it can be forwards. If he's wearing a hat, his time in competitive athletics is done. If you ever hear somebody tell you that he is going to train smarter, not harder, his time as a champion is done, whether he knows it or not. And in combat sports, right, it's no different than a job site. My father worked in the labor industry, but he would always take care of his hammer. He would take care of his drills. He would not come in at night with them in the bed of the truck and maybe it's going to rain. You always protect your tools. And I offer you that example because your hands in this sport are your tools for everybody, but maybe even a higher emphasis when you're Conor McGregor. So when you don't have them wrapped, when you don't have gloves, I wonder at times, what is the story? What is it he's trying to tell? Because he's showing us his body mechanics, of which are very hard to copy. Connor has a certain DNA. He has a reach. He has a power. He has a speed. He has a number of things. He has reflexes. He has explosive. There's a lot of things that you can't duplicate just because you see it. But either way, I don't remember a time where a guy was showing this. I remember times when guys were more like TJ Dillashaw and said, no, it's out there. You got to find it. I'm not going to break down the finer point. So, what message are we trying to get? Are we to believe that Connor's back? Is that what we're supposed to believe? Because I'm into the workout on your own. You will not, cannot, won't find me a champion that does not do a workout on his own with no one else around. It is the most important thing to gaining a mental edge. Because if other people are around and they're doing it too, where's the advantage? There's no benefit. Or you look around the room and realize, hey, that guy over there is doing it harder than I am, or he's doing more reps or faster, or he's lifting more weight. You got to be on your own so that you have the ability to lie to yourself and convince yourself, I'm paying a price that nobody else is. is an absolute added ingredient. You also must have a team. You must have a coach. Things that are missing from these videos. So, if I'm right, and we aren't supposed to be seeing these and getting a martial arts review and take, if something else is to be interpreted from this, I'm asking you, what is it? Brawl, done boxing, back to MMA. Now, there is zero truth to any of this, but I'm just sharing with you, like this is the story. And I sat down today to be my usual dick of a self towards George Masvidal. But I've changed my mind, because even though we're in a fallacy to believe that he will return to the UFC, he did say something that works. Now, here's what Masvidal said. He has no opponent, right? He's got no opponent. He's got no date. He's got no anything. He makes that very clear. Now, I submit for you that is evidence towards my claim that he will never be back. But he then says he's open to anything. He said they'll be begging me to fight for a title. And he's talking about his ability to draw and to have interest. And though that light is dimming, George Masvidal is a very meaningful presence in MMA. And there is most certainly things you could do with him. It's just a matter of, at 39, the UFC is not signing guys who left the organization and lost. I mean, any one of those things, when you put them all together. But Masvidal laid out a plan, a little bit of an idea. And Masvidal was just freestyling. Like, this was in order. Number one, be entertaining. The interview that he's doing, number one was to be entertaining. And number two was to get some headlines and have people talking about it. And number three, but it was very distant, was to feather the nest for a potential return. Like, George isn't going to hear me saying he's not coming back. And, oh, what a jerk. I can't believe he's holding me down. No, he knows he's not coming back. But before he lets that go, because it is also true that he would like to, and it is also true that a lot of you would like to see him come back, he put down an idea, and it was Conor versus Chandler. He's going to steal the fight, which means he'd be in there with Conor, I thought. So I reread this article. I thought like my dyslexia said it or something and I saw it wrong. No, he's not saying he's going to fight Conor. Masvidal is contending that Conor is not going to show up to the December fight opposite Chandler, and that he will fill in for Conor against Chandler. Now, that is the most viable idea you could possibly come up with. And it's not what the UFC is looking to do. They just don't play chess. They just don't do things for one night. Like, by example, there is not a scenario where Masvidal returns and gets three fights. If he returns, he's going to get one fight. So it would have to be a fancy fight. It'd have to be a big match fight, because the whole thing is a cash grab anyway. So all these things have to come together, which again only serves to eliminate Masvidal. They're not bringing a guy in that they don't want, that doesn't have longevity, into a main event spot when there's not a story to tell or somewhere else for him to go. Like, none of these things, any one of those, if you have in your column, will disqualify you from an ability to be able to compete in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. But is that wholly different than the situation Conor is in? There is no scenario where Conor comes back and does three more fights. There is no scenario where Conor takes something from the Chandler fight. And we need, as an industry, for that something to be used against somebody else later, like a contendership, like a ranking, like a title opportunity. None of those things exist. Conor is not any different than Masvidal, other than Masvidal at some point used the word retired. Conor's been out longer than Masvidal. Conor's plan to return has less wind and fire behind it than Masvidal. Conor's record in his last five fights is worse, if you can believe it, than Masvidal's. I'm just sharing for you, like, the insertion of Conor, and the only thing different about Conor and George is that Conor used the words. And how old's Conor? I said, George is 39. Conor's got to be right there. Conor's got to be pushing 36. So, I mean, you got two old men. I'm just suggesting for you, what's the difference? Neither one affects the rankings. Neither one does anything. Both move the needle. And we would like, and here's the greatest thing in George's favor. We would like something equitable to happen to Chandler. Well, how on earth do you do that when you have an anomaly like Conor McGregor? How do you do that? Look, I know these stats aren't current, but George Masvidal, for a period of time, was the second biggest star in the sport, at least from an ability to draw. I shouldn't say from an at least ability to draw. That's precisely what star means. Masvidal was number two. So, if you're looking to do something equitable for Chandler, and the poor guy would have waited at that point, with 2.5 years, closer to three, there is some reason where you might bring in a Masvidal. And I just thought it was a very smart call out. I thought the swerve, set it up by getting your attention. I'll just tell you, me as a reader, but I know it happened with you guys too. You get the attention talking about filling in for the McGregor-Chandler fight that's not going to go through, but instead of stealing the fight from Chandler and being against Conor, which would, again, he'd have got nothing. There would be nothing here. No. He's going to save the day. He's going to fill in for Conor. He's going to do the company a favor, which is exactly what he would need the company to do for him to ever get this one more match. So there was a lot of good things. And Masvidal goes deeply out of his way, and many of the greats do this. Masvidal will go deeply out of his way. He will put a lot of concern and care and effort so that what he does and how he does it appears that he put in no concern, no care, and no effort. Like, he conducted this interview in his car while he's driving down the road. How could you possibly care less about an interview? How could you be more careless than to not even be in a stationary place, to be out committing a crime while doing it? I mean, I'm just suggesting for all of that's very well thought out. And he's done that a number of times. Like, in large part, that is Masvidal's studio. That is his interview space. Now, if you were to hold that literal and not understand that that's part of the performance, you would just think like Masvidal has an aversion to airplanes and has got to drive around all the time. It's, as far as call-outs go, it's a very intelligent thing to do. As far as replacing Conor McGregor, if we're going to adhere to the fact that records don't matter, rankings don't matter, where you go from here, why this fight is happening, contention and tight, if we're admitting none of these things matter, and that's extremely rare. Like in the UFC, that is extremely rare. That has never happened for a main eventer. When Conor is to get in there, it will be the first time in the modern era that it happened for a main eventer. And I'm just sharing, if we are willing to look the other way on those things, George Masvidal is the next closest and best replacement. I'm just setting that down for you. I've got to give George credit on this. That call out, that idea, of which he even slipped a date in there, which was December, and he even made himself the hero to the UFC because they would need him in Conor's absence. Like, he covered as many bases as one could, and he did it all while driving in circles around his neighborhood. Is Sean Brady going down this weekend? Okay, now this is one of the better main events in a period of time. I mean, this is very strategically done. That's going to have a lot of eyeballs on it, and I guarantee you're going to hear all about the Spear event. Gilbert Burns had a little bit of time as an underdog and currently sits darn near even. But when you're darn near even a little bit the underdog, if you got to go one way or the other, let you know, the odds makers believe that Brady is going to win, even if by ever so slight a margin. And I'm wondering if you agree with that. And there's two things to this fight that, if you're a handicapper, there's two things that you want to really make sure you understand. First off, Sean Brady is as good as you've been told. Sean Brady was not fraud checked against Bilal Muhammad, which is not an expression I was even familiar with. Brady said that people were telling that on Twitter, and then the media was responding like they knew what that meant. I got to tell you, I'm a very cool and hip guy. I fraud checked. Who says that? We're a bunch of dorks. I wouldn't even know what the dork meant if he said that. I've never heard the term before, but Brady, when he lost to Muhammad, I didn't have a problem with the fact that Brady wasn't the best fighter in the world, which it turned out Bilal was. We didn't know that. But my problem was is Brady didn't bring his tools. That was not the Sean Brady that the 15 men that came before Bilal fought. 15-0 Sean Brady was going to that fight. But those 15 opponents faced somebody else. And that was not Sean with his best skills. And Sean Brady is so good at grappling. Let me tell you a personal story where I discovered Sean Brady. Okay, he's an MMA fighter, covered in tattoos, and he's small, at least compared to his opponent, Craig Jones. So I'm watching this event, and that's all I learn about Sean Brady. There was a mention of Enzo Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and there's a mention of MMA, and I want to say they even said that he was a signed fighter with the UFC, which really surprised me. I hadn't seen this guy before. And either way, he is just the next victim of Craig Jones. Like, the whole reason that Craig would accept the match is because the guy's got some level of stroke within the MMA community, right? So Craig goes out there, and Sean Brady got his hand raised. There's a little more to the story. There's a little more to some of the rule set, but it doesn't matter. It was a fair adjudication. It happened, and Sean Brady won. Now, as awesome as that's going to be, you're going to go, wow, Sean Brady, wow. What a great guy. And then, Chael, you're telling me on top of that that he was 15-0 at one point. You're telling me on top of that that he's got the experience of being in there with the best guy in the world, and Bilal Muhammad. You're telling me that most recently he got a submission victory over Kelvin Gastelum in a main event, so now he's got this kind of experience. Yes, I am. Yes. And you go ahead and tuck that away. But make sure that you understand this. Gilbert Burns is a different level of grappler. Gilbert Burns is the highest placing in all of the UFC that they've got right now. He is the highest placing ADCC competitor. Hickson Gracie, I don't think Hickson Gracie's son is still, I haven't seen him fight in well over a year. He also was a bronze medalist. I think he is in fact under contract. I must tell you, I'm not counting him because I haven't seen him in over a year. Before you nerds come and fact check me. And Gilbert is simply not going to get bitched out in grappling. Chimaev found that out the hard way, which was in the middle of battle. In the middle of battle, he found out Gilbert can wrestle for one, which is the same thing that Kamaru Usman had to find out. And you're not going to have your way with him on the ground in any position. So all of a sudden, all the things that Sean Brady did, if I'm right, if you agree with that, if you agree that Gilbert is that good at grappling, if you agree, then you've got to make sure that you understand all 15 of those guys that Sean Brady beat, and even Kelvin Gastelum in the most recent one. Everyone that Sean has ever faced, with the exception of Bilal Muhammad, who is a better wrestler and grappler, and brought a tremendous amount of frustration. So it wouldn't really matter how great Sean Brady was or what his past record is or what he's done if he did it all with grappling, and that grappling tool is about to be nullified. That's all I'm reminding you of. If you look at Sean Brady, or you look at his record, or you look at recent, or you even look at, you know, a newer guy against more veteran, all of those things, you look at rankings, I would fully understand it, and it's going to come off the page the same as DraftKings did. And DraftKings is then going to offer more numbers, which is known as a line. And I'm just letting you know, all of the skills and all those tools that you've ever seen from Sean, unless you disagree with me here, they're not going to work against Gilbert. As a matter of fact, it is a very likely scenario that we see Brady off of his back. So before you go and bet this fight, Really ask yourself one question. Do you believe, and do you have reason to believe, have you seen in combat a reason to believe that Sean Brady can outbox Gilbert Burns? And if you do, you go right on with your business. If you believe that Gilbert Burns' time has come and that sun has set, it happens on everybody, but I'll remind you how close he was with Blahal Muhammad on no notice in a weight class that he did not want to be at. He wanted to be spotted 5 pounds. It was his whole thing, and he was still very competitive. Guys, this is Gilbert Burns. This is Gilbert Burns. I got to remind you of that. It's as though you think he's somebody else. I don't think you've thought it through. I don't think that you think that Brady can beat Gilbert Burns. I don't think that you think that Brady is going to beat Gilbert Burns. I don't think you've thought about it. I think you got influenced by somebody else, or you got influenced by the numbers without understanding what it is that they both do so well. If you don't agree with that, by all means, there is apparently, according to DraftKings, more of you out there than people like me. But that's Gilbert Burns. And I don't think that Gilbert goes into a title shot from here. I don't think you could justify that, right? I'm not talking about illness and injury. I'm talking about straight line. I don't think that he's going to get the credit that he will deserve if he becomes the second man ever to be able to beat Sean Brady. However, I do believe that Gilbert would deserve to be put into a backup position. Let Blahal and Kamara have their little fight. Let Blahal and Rakhmonov have their little fight. Someone needs to be the backup. I really believe with a win and your guys' help that that person becomes Gilbert Burns. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chael. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chael, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chael. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Can somebody get me in touch with John Jones? I have got to talk to him. I believe I have his number, but he also might have changed it. The number I have is from like 5 years ago, and it used to be his number. But now it comes up in green, and I saw John do a thing. I saw him do it just recently, and he did it with his phone, which happened to be an iPhone. Now, that's relevant. If somebody has an Android, I have an iPhone. If somebody has an Android, text can come up green. But if they have an iPhone, to my understanding, they come up green when that number is no good or you have been blocked. So either way, I can't reach him. And I want to talk to John so bad. I have a story for you guys. I can't tell it because I don't know if John shared that with me in confidence. I don't know. We got separated. But I was so into it. And it was an analysis. Here, let me just tease you with it without giving. He gave an analysis on Ferreira, Problemo, and Francis Ngannou. And I will just tell you, it was so interesting to hear. I mean, his perspective, and I feel that John rhetorically isn't great. Man, when that camera goes on, he gets a little nervous. When you see some of John's finest work, it's where he's having an interaction that happens to get caught on camera. But it has to be that order. If the camera turns on and then he's asked to have an interaction, he gets nervous. Okay. But I'm telling you that because his analysis was unlike one I've ever heard. Okay. And this is coming from a genius. We can't take that from John. This is a combative sports genius. The only thing I've ever seen like it was satire in a movie called Good Will Hunting, where Matt Damon played a janitor who could solve the most complex math problems there were, where he could go home and read a book and remember all of it, retain it, and understand what he was reading. And when that got described by his best friend, who also was his best friend in the movie, Ben Affleck, Ben said, there's some people that can just play. They can just play. The great piano players were never trained. The great guitarists were never trained. They sit down and they can play. And as simple as that might sound, I don't have a better explanation for John's understanding of this sport, but he isn't marketed as such. You guys would not think of him as a great analyst because you've never heard him give an analysis. He doesn't ever talk about other fights. For example, he might talk about his opponent or what he's going to do. You can't find this anywhere. And I would love it. I want to get his opinion on two different things. First off, I want to ask him if I can reveal what he told me. So if you can't get me in touch with John, but you can get a hold of John, and you could ask that question, that would be great. I then want to ask him about Piera. I just want to get his analysis. As the most successful light heavyweight ever. And when John was coming up, John wanted to stay busy and it didn't matter who the opponent was. All the way to the world championship. He wanted to steer clear of Rashad for personal reasons. But when that time came, he did that match as well. But John was 23 years old. It's very different. Like a motivation that somebody might have at 23 years old is, for obvious reasons, different than, say, Piera, who is 35. Is Piera even 36 now? I think he just had a birthday. So I'd like to know what John thinks and how he would break down Piera, how he would explain his level of success, what would be needed done to beat him, but also if he admires, if he appreciates this young man's attitude that Piera has. Because it was the same attitude that John had, but John was a young man. Then I would love for him to do this. Instead of giving an analysis of his fight coming up with Stipe, instead of him giving an analysis of a potential fight with Aspinall, I would like John to just candidly speak about a hypothetical matchup between Aspinall and Stipe. I want John to just stand back, take himself out of it, and talk about what he believes would happen between Stipe and Aspinall. And John right now is doubling down, tripling down, and as of this morning, from my eyes, quadrupling down on the idea that he's not going to fight Aspinall. Now, there is no truth to that. It is a troll move, but is a troll move at John's expense. John is very sensitive, and a lot of fighters are, but John is very sensitive to what you guys think. What is your opinion? Which way are the winds blowing? What would impress you for me to do the most, just by example? And so when I tell you that John is trolling against himself, this is against John's nature to say, I'm not going to fight Aspinall, because he knows, so you guys all want him to fight Aspinall. Generally, he will give you exactly what you want. Generally, John will come to you openly in some form. I can share this. Back in 2013, when I fought him, it was no, 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 no. And before he said yes, he went to what was formerly known as Twitter and asked you guys. Hey, I'm starting to change my mind. I'm thinking about whipping this guy's ass. What do you guys think? I mean, but it matters to him. What you guys said, it matters to him. So when he's going against the idea of fighting Tom and he's getting this pushback and this resistance, which he does not enjoy, it's great. I got to tell you, it's great. It's great because you guys don't think he's scared of Tom. Most of you that are saying that Tom can beat him don't think that Tom can beat him. It's just your way. It's your playground, childish way of trying to get what you want, which is that match. And up until this point in John's career, he plays along. You win. You get to win that game. For the first time ever, you're not. And it's a very tricky spot, man. It is a wildly tricky spot. I have been on the other end of wanting a fight, of deserving a fight, of getting Dana and Lorenzo to tell me yes to my idea of a fight, and then the fight doesn't happen because the other side doesn't agree. And the opportunity that would exist over there, how badly I need it, how badly I want it, how badly I've worked to get it. And I will just tell you the level of frustration to the point of almost panic. So imagine being Tom. Tom Aspinall has done everything right, and he got it the hard way. By the way, he came off the shelf on an injury, knocked a guy out at home in a main event that could have gone five rounds that he would not have been ready for coming off of an injury. Does one more match, gets turned away by Ciryl Gane, which wasn't even a title fight. It was just Tom finally takes a short notice fight, which is only 18 months from being removed from the sport due to injury, takes it on short notice because of the opportunity. That's the one where he won the title. He then defended an interim championship, which to my understanding has never been done. It's never even been suggested. So Tom is finally, for the first time, pushing back and saying, stop, I have done enough. I want to be undisputed champion. I'm willing to get that the hard way. I'm willing to do it through John. I'm also willing for you to just give me the belt. You should have already given me the belt. I should not be defending interim championships. If we get to the point to defend them, it now needs to be the undisputed. All of Tom's arguments are fine, right? There is a point, an accurate point to all of those. But just imagine, Tom's done all those things, and now for the first time, he's saying, stop, I'm done. The next time I compete, the next time you call me and you want me to compete, I will do it against anybody, but it's going to be for the undisputed championship. Do you see how Tom's wording this? He's not specifically going after John. He's not specifically going after Stipe. That isn't his goal or his point. He has a different thing. He would like to be the undisputed champion. Tyson Fury ran his career the same way. Tyson Fury never was coming after Joshua the way a lot of the media told you he was. He was going after the undisputed championship, which Joshua happened to have. I mean, it's just a different look into a competitor's mindset. It's fascinating. So if you're Tom and you hear John is saying, no, not going to happen, well, you can hang your hat on one thing if you're Tom. The exact same thing that Michael Chandler is hanging his hat on for the last 2 years, which is, yeah, the answer is yeah. I already know. I got an insight from the guy that decides. I already know. Well, not so fast, because if John says no and adds the caveat, I'm going to retire. See, that's the thing that Michael Chandler doesn't have. Michael Chandler is holding on because he knows when Conor comes back, it's going to be against him. He doesn't know when that's going to be, but he does know that. He believes in that wholeheartedly. And Conor, in spite of all the mind-changing he does, has never hinted at that he's going to retire. So if you're Tom, at some point you take a guy at his word, even if you're being trolled. And you do what, guys? You go and book another match. So the power that John potentially has from the troll job that he's doing, it's awesome. It's incredible. It's the first time he's done something like this. I'm in full support of it, by the way. I mean, Dana White doesn't know how to build or hasn't revealed to us yet how he's going to build Stipe versus Jones. So Dana is taking the Jones part and he's going a different direction. He's just talking about GOAT. He's just talking about all time, right? He's finding a way and he's getting headlines. He's bringing attention. He's getting media, but he's going from that direction, not about the match itself. And Jones is doing the same thing. He likes Stipe. And Jones understands if you want people to hate you, go after Stipe on a personal level. Go after Stipe in the media. You can't do it. Stipe is as close to a superhero as sports has. There is nobody as perfect as Stipe. So Jones not touching it. He's getting his headlines in a completely other direction. I don't want you guys to miss this. Don't get lost in the words. Enjoy the performance. Sean O'Malley is the biggest star in the sport. Now, Sean has a belt to prove his skills within the sport, but Sean easily, not even close, outworks everybody in the sport. The work that O'Malley does between fights and fighters and even your top drawing fighters, broad stroke, find a way to monetize their career and up their stock three times a year. And the commodity is the performance. Sean O'Malley is putting out a performance closer to 5 days a week than he is three times a year. And before Sean had that torch, it was held by Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor, much like Sean, outworked everybody in the sport. He found a way to have a commodity aside from the performance, the athletic performance. And I'll tell you one hot on the trail that I would be disagreed with, and that is Bilal Muhammad. Bilal is not drawing, right? Bilal is champion. Let's just look at his division. He's champion of 170 pounds. If we go and look what we can expect his next pay-per-view to do, and we compare that against another 170-pounder called Georges St-Pierre, it's not going to look the same. You say, well, why isn't it? But I feel as though the finished product numbers are going to mislead you. I feel like you need to back up. Let me give you a great example. Leon Edwards. If we went and we were to see where Leon was in the sport in terms of being over with you, the audience, 3 weeks after he won the championship. Boy, he was hot. Remember that? Remember how hot Leon was? It was the knockout. Heard around the world. I watched that fight. Leon versus Kamara. I watched that fight at a movie theater. It was the first time the UFC, or at least the first time I heard about it, was showing in a movie. I went in, I got popcorn, the whole bit. I paid for a ticket just like movie. Could have watched this pay-per-view. It's awesome. It was awesome. Big deal, right? Little things like that, but then Leon's in the right place at the right time, having the right performance. Like, he really popped. I don't think that he's ahead. I don't think if we could go back and look at where Leon was 3 weeks after all of that, this wonderful moment, I don't believe he's ahead of Muhammad. I don't believe if we went back and looked at the numbers of Johnny Hendricks. I don't think if we went back and looked at the number of Matt Hughes. And I'm offering these guys because these were champions within the same division. I'm not sure the numbers of Robbie Lawler, and Robbie could be an outlier. I'm not sure that Bilal is behind. I don't know that I believe that. I believe he's being compared to the wrong numbers. Oh, by the way, if you look at where Muhammad was 2 years ago and you look at where he is now, that jump has not been done by anybody other than Sean Strickland. Like where Sean was 2 years ago, or you could even back 3 years, or you could even go 4 years versus where they are now. Like nobody has shot up higher on the card, in the rankings, in the title, in the money, in the hearts and minds than those two. And it's a damn close push. And Sean also is very, very active at getting his name and brand out there aside from the commodity of the performance. And Muhammad just had a great one, by the way. He was talking about Conor McGregor, and nobody can resist the idea of Conor McGregor. Like, Conor went through a period of time where every time there was a pay-per-view, during the pay-per-view, Conor would steal the thunder from the guys that were actually fighting, and he wouldn't even come to the event to support it. And he would put somebody over and say, hey, how great you look tonight, Frankie Edgar. Speaking of Frankie, I've been wanting to fight you. Maybe I'll see you soon. Like, it was one of these things. And now Frankie has no choice. Like, wow, that would be the huge fight. And that's Conor. I got to go and get that thing. He would have no choice but to try to keep that momentum going. Only for the next pay-per-view to roll around and Conor to rip the rug out from Frankie and hand it to Poirier. Just for example, who has no choice but to go to the press conference and run with it. And it was one of these things where Connor, who wasn't even there, he didn't deserve the shine. It wasn't his 15 minutes. He still, through the power of a tweet, would command and dominate a press conference that he wasn't even at. Because you'd have to get asked about his comments. So I'm just sharing for you, like, guys need to see around that. You got to be able to know when they have no chance of getting a fight. Or to understand that denying a fight is still a way of talking about a fight. It doesn't change. You want a headline? You want to keep it going? You don't want to bury it? You can do that also by saying no to it. That within itself creates a story. And I'm only sharing this with you because Blahal is only the second one that I've ever seen do this to Connor. Blahal just did an interview. I think it was on his own platform. He said, Connor's a washed-up fighter, but he said it a way cooler way. Like, it was, he said it very funny. He said, you know, he's got the appearance of a washed-out fighter, and he looks like he's on drugs. It was a simple statement, but it popped off the page. I couldn't believe it when I was looking at it. I'm like, oh, I read this thing three times. And he went on to say that even regarding Connor, if he got a win over Chandler, I wouldn't fight him. I wouldn't give him the opportunity. He's not cutting any line with me at the top. No matter how big that fight is, he's not the right guy. And it was the right way to handle it. It was very interesting. And it's these little things, right? Like, if you want to be the king, you got to bring him down. But you also got to know when to make your move. And there's very few guys who can make a move against Connor, because he is going to be the main event. But champions of the world are an exception, because they will never fight on a card with Conor McGregor where they aren't the main event. So they're either on a different card or they're against him. All right, did you see where it's different? It's very, very different. It's very different why a guy could react the way that Blahal reacted. Conor has nothing Muhammad wants. Nothing. He don't want his ranking. He doesn't want his record. He don't want his belt. He doesn't have one. I mean, right, do you understand? It's very different. And so it was just so perfect. The only other guy that I've ever seen handle McGregor this way as a way of trying to get McGregor is Justin Gaethje, who has only said no to the fight as a way of building talk and getting the fight. It's been great. And it got me thinking, I would like, and I've never seen this, if this is out there, somebody send me the link. I don't think it's happened. I would like to see Blahal and Sean O'Malley together. I would be very curious how that would go, because I know they watch each other and I know they respect each other, not just from a fighting standpoint, from their understanding of what they do outside of fighting as a way of building their brand. But would they show each other that respect? Would they get along? I don't know. I don't know. They both have platforms. I'd like to see a swap made. Blahal, you come on mine, I'll come on yours. And then let it go from there. Where they go at each other, where they get along, where they put each other over. Like, there's a way for those two juggernauts. And as much as O'Malley is in the spot, that's true. But the bounce that Blahal has, I mean, in all fairness, you can't deny it. You can't look away. There is no third. You have Blahal, you have Strickland, in terms of what they have done in such a short period of time. If that gets duplicated, all of a sudden we're having a very potentially different conversation about who's number one. And I want to see that. I want to see a joint interview. Not against each other, though it could turn into that. I just want to see it. I want to see the dynamics. If somebody can do it, if somebody can get a split screen, or even these guys can do it themselves, make a trade, however they want to do it. But I want to see Muhammad and I want to see O'Malley on the same program. DraftKings, right now, dead even. They are dead even. And this is so interesting because, frankly, guys, you know what they should be? If I was to set the line, you may not understand this with gaming, but you will have an odds maker. And that is a career. That is a job. And you got to be very good at your job. But you will do what's called set the line, which means where are we going to kick off? Everything, every negotiation, you got to start somewhere. So that's what the odds maker is going to do. He's going to get it started somewhere. But then you, the bettors, you're going to control the line. You're the ones that move the line. There isn't money that comes in and then the guy that set the line comes back and redoes it. No. The equation just starts to come in. more people bet on O'Malley, he's the favorite. That's how that works. And I share that because, like, take Conor McGregor, for example, almost always goes off as a favorite. As a matter of fact, he's a 2-1 right now against Chandler. I don't believe 2-1 of you believe that Conor can do that, but you just get a loyalty. You get money coming in from Ireland, and it will move those lines. Now, O'Malley's single best performance was his last one, and it was in every possible way. Not only did O'Malley deal with Cheeto, who he had a loss to before that got overturned by the Sugar State Athletic Commission, but he's got this huge gate. He's got every dream that he's ever had, and now it's come true. Like, there's just things that are on you in that moment, not to mention how good Cheeto had been looking. Cheeto was on fire. And O'Malley won all 5 rounds. But O'Malley also won every aspect of that fight. The range, the conditioning, the kicking, the punching, the pressure, the combinations. He won every aspect of that fight. And Cheeto, who's a very good wrestler, never got started. And that was one of the big takeaways. Like, whatever O'Malley is doing, he lifts the knee, shows an uppercut up the middle. He's doing some stuff that you can see, but there's movements that he's doing. There's an ability that O'Malley has with range where you take a guy like Cheeto, who's very good at the wrestling, didn't even attempt it. It wasn't a matter that he failed. It wasn't a matter that O'Malley out-wrestled him or out-defended him. Cheeto never attempted it. He never could get going. He never saw that first entry. He never felt that where he would change elevation, try to close that distance, drag him down to the mat, right? That's wrestling. And it was a really big deal because we knew that O'Malley was going to draw into Merab. And that night is when DraftKings put out the line. That night, in Miami, $14 million gate, Sean O'Malley just won 5 rounds, did not show any weaknesses. And the people that believe that Merab is going to beat O'Malley, and this includes Merab, know to do that, they got to go take him down. Oh, and by the way, the plan to take him down, they don't got 5 takedowns or 3 takedowns. They don't even have 2. They have 1. It's a double leg. And they're going to throw that at the backboard as many times as it takes, or at least that's the plan. If that doesn't work, they're not going to win. Like, but I'm sharing with you, like, that's what's understood. Even by O'Malley knows that. This is not a secret coming into this fight. So when DraftKings posts the line as a 2-1 favorite for Merab, how? My guess, and I cover this that night, my guess is that line was preset. Merab was going to draw in for a title. There was a preset line for Cheeto versus Merab, and there was a preset line for O'Malley versus Merab. I do not believe it came after that performance. I do not believe the person that set that line at DraftKings had the current information, which is that performance, because there was no way to see that and believe anybody could beat O'Malley. That guy, that O'Malley that Cheeto had to deal with, not only doesn't lose to a 135-pounder, he doesn't lose a round. Not that guy. I mean, Cheeto got dealt from the bottom of the deck, right? Some guys will perform outside of their abilities, outside their glow. Oh, the best performance of my life. Okay, well, that's up to this point what Cheeto had to go deal with. And now that there's been time, and the O'Malley people have settled down and come and started to have their say, it is dead even. And that is so fascinating. We still got a week to go. Wait till the bettors get to Vegas. Wait till the players are waiting until they're there. Till they see the press conferences. Till they see the open workouts. And then they go and they log into DraftKings. I mean, let's just see what happens. And I can live with it either way, by the way. I can live with Merab being the favorite. I won't come out and tell you. Like, this isn't my analysis of who I think is going to win. That's going to come for you next week. What I'm sharing for you is DraftKings at the beginning at 2-1, I don't believe took into consideration that performance. I believe that line and the reason they got it dropped so quickly is because it was preset and that they had one for O'Malley versus Merab and they had one for Cheeto versus Merab. But now that it's coming and now that you guys have had your say, that line and that 2-1 is gone. It is a dead push. Which means half of you believe Marab can take him down with a double leg. And half of you believe O'Malley can stay on his feet, avoiding a double leg. That, and that solely, is what the push at DraftKings right now represents. The most under-promoted fight of 2024, and I want to know why. It is without question Diego Lopez versus Brian Ortega. Guys, this is imminent. This is coming up. By the way, this has a backstory. This was supposed to happen. There was shenanigans. All hell broke loose. Jeff Molin saves the day with an unprecedented move. Insert at a brand new weight class, Dan Ortega. Which, by the way, was the second time in as many days as they changed the weight class on Diego Lopez. Easily the biggest part of the story is that nobody's even discussing. I mean, when I talk about this is the under-promoted fight of 2024, and I do want to know why. Do people not agree with me? Do they not think this is such a great fight? Do they not think that this is such a big fight? Do they not think that the stakes are so high? Lopez was a fun guy to watch with really powerful hands who had a weird haircut. That's who he was. That's not who he is now. He is new kid on the block, moving up the rankings, this close to being in title contention. It's a very different scenario for Lopez, and a lot of it ties into that fight week of him getting a call at 3 a.m. from Tim Ortega and him agreeing to change a weight class that he'd already cut down to. He was already on weight. He was just waiting for the scales to open. He agrees to change to that. The very next day, he switches opponent and changes yet again to 165 pounds. Now, body percentage-wise, you're talking like a 12% spread at that weight class. Nobody would do that. Nobody would do it. Nobody has done that. It was this incredible thing. And now, right, we're putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. But all of a sudden, there isn't a promotion. So I just want to know, is there a belief? Is there a question? There must be. There must be a belief and a question somewhere by somebody that this match doesn't make it to the ring. And I want to just take a good look at that. So DraftKings now has Lopez as the favorite. Now, I will tell you, and it surprised me, Lopez was the favorite going into the first one. He was the favorite going into 302. I remember coming and talking to you guys, and I told you this is the money-making opportunity since my time over at DraftKings. Right, DraftKings is my partner, by the way. Do I need to disclose that to you guys? They are my partner. I try to get them beat every single weekend. I try to get you guys their money. And I warn you, be careful listening to Chael. But let me at least give you a history lesson and some behind-the-scenes information that you will want to consider. And at that time, again, the week of 302 and just prior to it, I told you, Ortega's going to beat this guy. Lopez has one problem, and it's only one, and most of the powerful guys do. Most of your power punchers do. You can take it back to Iron Mike Tyson. A difference between Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali can fight you for 12 rounds. Mike will not still be standing. You're not likely to be. You're more unlikely to be, as a matter of fact, against Mike than you are Muhammad. But should the end of the night come, right? Mike Tyson is the one that coined the phrase. People have given me credit. This was in Sports Illustrated, Chael Sonnen. I got this from Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson said, if you ever look for the finish, you're not going to win a decision. And all Mike did is look for finishes, and he didn't win decisions. So when you think, and I offer Mike because it's a great example, but all of the ones in between, when you have those powerful guys, they're not made for championship rounds. And where that becomes so relevant is the pace of Ortega. It is his number one weapon. His jiu-jitsu that he claims is his number one weapon because he respects Henner, Coach Henner Gracie, so much, is actually number two. It's his volume, his work ethic, and his output in those rings is really something to be desired. And I don't believe in my heart that Lopez can take him out. I don't believe that he can hit him hard enough to make Ortega quit. I don't believe that. I must tell you now that we are 2-3 months removed, I am worried about that prediction. The Brian Ortega that I'm telling you has the work ethic and has the pace to take anybody out, to make a coward out of any man. The Brian Ortega that I'm telling you is too tough to fall. And if he goes down, he ain't staying down. I am worried about why he missed weight. I am worried by after getting everything that he wanted, which was the weight change, no fine. Don't forget, this wasn't Brian missing weight. Brian's got Tiki. They know exactly how to do this. They got a new bout agreement. Brian Ortega did not miss weight against Lopez. You'll read that certain places. What you're reading is wrong. He got it changed. So he's got no fine. He's got no problem. And he gets the 10 pounds. He gets all his money. He literally got everything that he wanted and didn't show up for the fight. That worries me. What was the reason behind that? Which, by the way, might make perfect sense, but we haven't been told it. It worries me. It worries me to the point that this very fight that was going to happen 3 months ago, we'll call it, that very fight, June 29th, the same two guys. And I was going to tell you it was the money-making opportunity against my own partners, DraftKings, that they got this one wrong. I'm not ready to do that right now. There are some questions on Ortega. And a guy gets a stomach bug, a flu. Like, there are perfectly reasonable explanations, but we haven't been given them. So there is a question mark. And it does turn out, in all fairness, that Lopez is even better than we thought he was. It's a hard match, but it's an exciting match. There's a lot on it. Diego Lopez is not there yet, and you will see this when these guys make the walk. The bigger star of the two is Ortega, and it's by a lot. You will see this at the press conference. You will see this at the stare downs. Their star power is not the same. But that's one thing about this sport. Everything you got is on the line. That ranking, that star power, your placement on the card, all of it. And that is what Lopez needs. And that's what Lopez is in an opportunity to go out there and take. The stakes of this fight are massive. They're amongst the biggest of the evening, only overshadowed by the main event. The co-main event does not overshadow the stakes that are on Ortega versus Lopez, and is the underpromoted fight and is the misunderstood fight of 2024. All right, everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And to the fighting accountant on Apple Podcasts who suggests I interview my mother, and he says that he thinks my mother sounds great by the way that I describe her, I'm going to tell her you said that, and that will make her feel good. Plus, that's a great idea. Perhaps I'll do it someday. Enjoy the fights this weekend, everybody. Just make sure you're back here on Tuesday for a full recap. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.